Good morning. How are you guys doing today? Good, good. Are you guys excited to be in a new location this morning? Our first service in our new building. We've got some exciting stuff going on. And we're starting a new series today also. But before we get into the series, I wanted to kind of paint a mental picture for you guys. So everybody got their imaginations on this morning? All right. So this is a picture of a tree that I took in Guatemala a few years ago. Now, I took this picture, and I remember the moment when I took this picture. I remember thinking, man, like, I love trees, but this tree was like, it moved me. Like, it was a beautiful tree, and it's hard to tell from the picture, but this tree is like massive. Like, if you look at this picture, you can see these little picnic tables under it, and they just look like tiny. This is a huge tree with a big solid trunk, big branches, and when you look at this, you see that there's different parts of a tree, and each part kind of moves, it works together to make the entire tree. So you have the trunk, you've got the branches, you've got the leaves, and you also have the roots. So why are we talking about trees? We're talking about trees today because I want to explain to you guys. I want you guys to kind of get a mental picture and kind of join me with this. This is the way that I see the Bible. So we look at the Bible and we have the Gospels. And we have Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And this is the story of Jesus. This is the story of the good news. This forms the trunk of the tree. It's firm. It's set, and out of it, it grows the rest of the books of the New Testament. So you have the letters, you have the instructions, you have the stories of the apostles, the disciples of the early church growing out of this, and that forms the branches. And then out of the branches grows the leaves. Now these leaves are, it's the good things that are produced. It's the actions. It's the wisdom. It's the love that is produced by the church throughout the years. It comes and goes, and it remakes itself every single year. Every generation, there is a new wave of growth that is seen in the leaves. But, like we said, there's another part to a tree. A tree has to be firmly planted by its roots for it to support new growth. So in this metaphor, what do you think is the roots of the Bible? Right, the Old Testament. So the Old Testament, it provides a context for the New Testament that encourages and allows for new growth. Now, there's things that it's easy to want to completely just separate, to put the Old Testament aside and say, you know, it's ancient, it's stories about people and lands and stuff, how can it relate to me? It's, you know, some people say that Jesus did away with that he did away with the need for the Old Testament. But the New Testament, it's more relatable. It's something that it's more applicable to my life. I can take the lessons, I can take the wisdom, and I can use it in my daily life. So it's easy to want to kind of separate the two. But without the roots being firmly planted, there can be no growth. You uproot a tree, it's still a tree. But it doesn't allow for new growth unless the roots are there. So the Bible is the unified story of God. So in order to learn about God, we really need to start in the beginning. Now the reason I went through all of this with you guys is because I want you to understand something. You might have already noticed that we refer to the Old Testament books a lot. We use a lot of references from the Old Testament, especially from Genesis. So I want everyone to understand why. That we're not just pulling these things out of nowhere to prove a point. That it's because if you really want to understand the Bible, you have to first recognize the roots. So we're getting started in a new series today. And the series is called Image of God. And in this series, over the next few weeks, we are going to be discussing what it means to be made in the image of God. So we're going to start at the very beginning. Genesis 1, 26 through 28. It says, God said, let's make human beings in our image as our likeness, so they can hold sway over the fish in the sea, over the birds in the heavens, over the animals, over all the earth, and over all things that move on earth. So God created human beings in his image. He created them in the image of God. He created them male and female. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful, be numerous, fill the earth and subjugate it. Hold sway over the fish in the sea, over the birds in the heavens, and over every creature that moves on earth. All humankind was created to be the image of God on earth. But what does that mean? What it does not mean is God did not recreate himself in human form. He did not divide himself into all of humanity in a pure original form. He created an image of himself to be seen on earth. Humans are in the image of God, are the image of God in their moral, spiritual, and intellectual natures. So what's the definition of the word image? Because I'm real nerdy, so I like to look at definitions of things. So the actual definition of the word image is it is a visual representation of something. So I showed you a picture of a tree. You can look at the picture and you can say, yes, that is a beautiful tree. The scene is beautiful. The mountain range behind it is gorgeous. The sky is blue. The leaves are green. It's beautiful. But that picture is an image of something that exists somewhere else. So by looking at the picture, you can tell that the tree is beautiful, but have you experienced the tree? Have you sat in the shade of the tree? Have you felt the cool breeze? Have you smelled the fresh mangoes? Have you heard the laughter of the children that's at the playground next to it? Have you seen the leaves blowing in the wind? Have you listened to the birds as they flutter around in the branches? Does anybody kind of want to go to this tree now? See, the experience of being with the original is different than experiencing an image. The image I showed you put a desire in you to experience the real tree. You see the difference here? Now, it might seem like I'm kind of splitting hairs, but there is a very big difference, especially when we start talking about being the image of God. Because we were created to be the visual representation of God on earth. We are meant to represent God in such a way that we give people the desire to have a real experience with God. What an honor. That's some pretty cool stuff, right? I know I got a little bit of extra dose of nerdiness than most people, but I think this is really cool stuff. So we were created with the purpose of representing God on earth to the rest of his creation. So God created the world. He created everything in it. And then he created man. And he tells man, like what we just read, hey, this is my creation. You're part of my creation, but I've chosen you to help take care of the rest of this creation. We were created with the purpose of representing God on earth to the rest of his creation. In other words, we are stewards of God's creation. Now, we are not just meant to maintain. We are not maintenance people. We are not just trying to keep up with things. No, God told us that we are commissioned to create and cultivate, that we are supposed to take the raw material of creation that he handed us, and we are supposed to do something with it. We are supposed to make it something more than it was. Have you guys ever thought about what it's like to be a cow? Like, what does a day of a cow look like? So what does a cow do? It sleeps, it eats, it makes milk, it gets rid of what it's eaten. It makes fertilizer, in other words. This is their life. They do this over and over. They eat, they sleep, and no one judges them for it. Think about it. What value does a cow offer besides being who they are? Being what it was created to be. We get milk. We get fresh cut grass. We get steaks. But there's nothing more. There's no further ambition from that cow to be something more. And we don't judge them for it. Why don't we judge them? Because it's what they were created to do. You know, the life of a cow, no matter when they lived, where they lived, in thousands of years, the life of a cow doesn't look much different. There was no Galileo cow that looked up at the stars and wondered about them. There's been no Napoleon cow that has burned with the desire to travel and explore and conquer the lands of other cows. There's been no cow with any ambition to be anything other than what it was created to be. But from the moment of creation, there has been no end to the drive to create and improve every aspect of life for humans. Humans have souls, minds, emotions, and creative capacities that make us unique from the rest of creation. So where do we get this drive toward innovation and production? Where does it come from? Let's look back at the beginning. Genesis 1:28, we just read this. It's part of our creation story. He created us in his image, and then he says, be fruitful, be numerous, fill the earth and subjugate it. Hold sway over the fish in the sea, over the birds in the heavens, and over every creature that moves on earth. Y'all, we were created in God's image to co-rule and co-create with him. Now, that's a big and important job. But have you ever noticed how sometimes when you give people a big job or give them a new responsibility, that it kind of goes to their heads just a little bit? This makes me think of the character Barney Fife. Anybody like the Andy Griffith Show? Yeah? If you are unfamiliar with the Andy Griffith Show, here's a little summary. So it's set in the 50s, 60s in a southern town, small southern town. And Andy Taylor's the sheriff, but his deputy, Barney Fife, he has good intentions. But whenever he's given any kind of responsibility, it always goes to his head. And he ends up messing things up, and Andy has to come in and fix everything. Even though he had good intentions, the responsibility, the giving him a little extra power, it made him overreact. It made him move in a way that was unnatural to him. You know, what is it against human nature that makes us not want to be the sidekick? You know, like everybody wants to be Batman, but nobody wants to be Robin. It's kind of comical when you look at it in like this kind of context. Like Barney when he's fumbling around for power and trying to be in charge and stuff, it's kind of funny seeing him because he always messes up. But in reality, when this happens, it produces harmful results. It is harmful to allow selfish desire to claim a position or responsibility beyond your created purpose. So we're going to look at probably the earliest recorded example of this, the story of the fall. The setting is the Garden of Eden. We have Adam and Eve, newly created, and God gave them this purpose of co-creating with him. They had everything that they needed. God gave them food to eat. He gave them jobs to do. He provided everything they needed. And he asked one thing. They had one job to do. Don't eat the fruit from the tree of knowledge, good and evil. But you know, there's always a snake in the garden, right? So this snake, he's trying to convince Eve that maybe you misunderstood God, because surely you're not actually, like, it's not going to be a bad thing. Look at this fruit. It looks great. Like, everything looks good about this. How could it be bad? And he says to her, you won't die at all. Rather, God knows that on the day you eat of it, your eyes will open and you'll become like gods, knowing good and bad. Did you guys catch that? He's telling her, you can be more than just the image of God. You can become like God. You can change who you are. Instead of being the sidekick, instead of being the co-creator, you can be like the creator. You can be like the original. If you just do this one thing, if you just eat of this fruit, he made it look good to her. And the woman saw that the tree was good to eat and that it was an object of longing to the eyes. And the tree was desirable for giving insight. She was blinded by the longing and desire to become a god and could no longer see her purpose. You know, humanity tends to have kind of a humility issue. Because this is just one example. Anytime, like, you can read all throughout the Old Testament, the New Testament, books, history, you can read the news today and you're going to see examples of people allowing their own personal desires, their own personal longing to make them make a bad decision. So how do we do this? Where does this drive come from? How are we supposed to be God's image on earth? You know, this drive was given to us by God. It is not a bad thing to want to create, to want to improve, to want to move forward. God created us with this drive. It comes from him. But we have to learn how to balance it with humility and love. Paul wrote a letter to the church in Philippi, and in it he wrote, "Never act out of selfish ambition or vanity. Instead, regard everybody else as your superior. Look after each other's best interest, not your own." What an idea. Put your own desires, put your own plan in the back seat. Put somebody else in front of you. Think about others first. Recognize your position in creation. Recognize who you were created to be. Recognize that even though we are co-creators, we are not the creator. So what does it look like to be the image of God without vanity and selfish ambition? We look to some kings in the Old Testament. You guys have heard of King David, right? Pretty big character in the Bible, pretty big guy. You know, he was known, he was said to be a man after God's own heart. And his story, he was elevated from poor shepherd to the king of Israel. Out of a field, he was put into a palace. But before him, there was another king, King Saul. King Saul was also selected by God. He was also pulled from where he was into a place of power and position in the palace. So what's the difference between these two kings? They were both selected by God. They were both given the purpose, the position to rule. So what's the difference? See, the main difference is that Saul allowed power and personal ambition to corrupt his character. He became a selfish and jealous ruler. His downfall was a result that his personal elevation was put before yielding to God. He put himself, his own desires, before that of God's. He stopped living as an image of God and started trying to hold on to the position of being a God. But you know, David wasn't perfect. We can learn a lot from him. He made lots of mistakes. But the difference, he always returned to God, and he always yielded to God's authority in the end. You know, we all make mistakes. But like David, we can learn to let those mistakes keep us humble. We can learn that only by the grace and power of God do we have breath in our lungs. That our position, that our purpose is nothing if we do not maintain humility and love. You know, in Psalms 8, which David wrote the Psalms, poems, and songs that he was talking about how glorious God was. And in Psalms 8, David asks a question. He says, "What are people that you are mindful of them? Human beings that you attend to them?" In other words, he's saying, God, why do you even care about humans? We fail. We let you down. But still, you care about us. You take care of us. You still hope for us. And then he immediately answers his question. And he says, "But you made them fall short of God by a little. And you crowned them with honor and magnificence. You let them rule over the things that your hands made. You put everything under their feet. Sheep and cattle, all of them, and the animals of the wild too. The birds of the heavens, the fish of the sea. What passes over the path and the seas. Yahweh our God, how mighty is your name in all the earth." Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Sounds kind of like that mandate that we read in Genesis. See, the order of things is God, and then God's creation, and then smack dab in the middle here is humanity, which is part of God's creation, but with a divine purpose. From the beginning, humans have allowed selfishness to keep them from living up to their responsibility of being God's image. From the very beginning. So where does this leave us? Is there any hope that we can live up to being the image of God? Now, over the next few weeks, we're going to talk about a few things. Next week, we're going to talk about what happens when we try to create images on our own. And then the following week, we're going to talk about what it can look like when we learn how to rule and reign by God's definition and not our own. But today, I want to skip ahead a little bit and give you a little bit of a glimpse of what's coming. Because I don't want to leave you guys here today feeling like humanity is a hopeless cause. See, even in the darkest times, you know those times in the Old Testament before Jesus? Can you imagine a world before Jesus? A time when people weren't able to connect directly with God, before people were allowed a personal connection and relationship with God, they had to go through a priest, they had to hear a message from a prophet. Even in the darkest times, God still sent He still sent messages of hope to his people. So we read about how God offers hope through a promise that through the prophet Isaiah. He says, out of the stump of David's family will grow a shoot. Yes, a new branch bearing fruit from the old root. And the Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. The Spirit of wisdom and understanding. The Spirit of counsel and might. The Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. He will delight in obeying the Lord. He will not judge by appearance or make a decision based on hearsay. I bet you guys can all guess who brought that hope. Jesus came to live as a human, to provide us the perfect example of how we can balance divine purpose, how we can balance being created as the image of God with humility and love. By following the example of Jesus, we can begin to redeem the image of God on earth. So because of that hope, we can leave here today and we can celebrate.